Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. You're listening to The Leadership Focus, an internet radio show geared to everyday leadership, both at work and throughout your life. Each week, we present you with new ideas, interesting guests, and actionable strategies to help you be an incredible leader with a more balanced life. I'm your host, Lisa Pospyork, Executive Coach and CEO of Focus Coaching, a leadership coaching and training firm based in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And tonight our topic is respect, the critical key to building a culture of engagement. And our guest tonight is Dr. Paul Marciano. Dr. Marciano is a leading authority on employee engagement and retention, with an impressive career going back over 20 years in the field of organizational development. He received his doctorate from Yale in clinical psychology, where he specialized in behavior modification and motivation. He has taught at both Davidson College and Princeton University, courses in leadership, industrial organizational psych, survey development, and research methods and statistics. In 2003, he founded the human relations consulting firm Whiteboard LLC. Paul's 2010 book, Carrots and Sticks Don't Work, Building a Culture of Engagement with the Principles of Respect, provides dozens of real-world case studies and turnkey strategies to increase engagement and reduce turnover. In addition to public speaking, writing, teaching, and consulting, Dr. Marciano founded and runs Color Me, an interesting company which I'll ask him to tell us more about. Welcome, Paul.
Lisa, thank you so much for having me on your show.
Oh, it's great to have you. I'm glad you could fit this into your really busy schedule. So do tell us a little bit about Color Me. I understand it was recognized in 2007 by the Wall Street Journal.
Yes, well, I'm very, very proud of that. So it's one of these interesting ideas that comes to you and percolates. And then someday you say, I just have to do something about this. In 1998, while I was teaching at Davidson College, I had sent my godchild a greeting card, and when I visited her over the holidays, she showed it to me, and she had colored all over it with crayons.
Ah.
And her mother was terribly embarrassed, but a light bulb went off for me, which was, greeting cards aren't fun for kids. So what if we combined the fun of a coloring book, black outlined art, with the thoughtfulness of a greeting card, so that children actually got to co-create greeting cards, which would obviously have much more fun and meaning for them and more meaning for those who receive them. So I founded a company in 2003, and we took all children's artwork. So there are a couple principles we founded the company on. One was that we would use only children's artwork. Secondly, we would give 10% of our gross proceeds to children's charities.
Nice.
This is one of the reasons we were written up in the Wall Street Journal. Mm-hmm. And then all of our products would be American-made.
Nice.
And we had some product lines. We had a patriotic product line, a thank you product line. We're big on saying thank you. And so we had some wonderful success with the cards, and then we moved into other markets. And what really hit for us were the pillowcases, because children tend to only have one or two pillowcases. And if you can imagine, for example, a horse scene, like a horse in a corral, and then taking fabric markers and coloring it in and putting it in the dryer, and then the child has their very own custom pillowcase to sleep on, and that's just been really, really fun for kids.
Oh, how nice. They can sleep with the horses.
That's right, and
yeah.
It's great for a sleepover activity as well. So
yeah.
It's been a really neat experience.
So this children's book or children's coloring book idea or children's greeting card ties in with your family legacy. Can you share with our listeners that?
Yeah.
I think that's a really interesting and cool piece.
I have a small claim to fame, which is that my maternal grandfather was the author and illustrator of the children's book Madeline. This goes back to 1939, and it's really been an honor. That character has stayed alive and current, and one of the explanations for that is that Madeline was really the first female heroine in children's books. she was really courageous and fearless and was able to stand up for herself, and that's just proven to be a wonderful role model for little girls.
Yeah. My daughter loved it. And it's true, the books for children, the majority of the lead characters, especially the brave and courageous ones and the ones that are doing interesting things, tend to be male. And so it's an exception. I mean, it certainly was back then, but even now, if you look at children's literature, you'll see that so many more of them, the girl is the sidekick, you know, or the friend. So it's great.
Yeah.
So tell me more about your background. I understand you were born and raised with horses. What did that mean to you, and how does it connect with what you're doing today?
I have to tell you, I'm looking across at the farm that I grew up on. I live right across the street.
Wow.
We have about 50 horses there. One of the ways that it impacted me was I really learned to respect the land that we grew up on, the animals, the responsibility of caring for animals, respect this work in general. My father had a simple saying, which was, if you wanted to eat 7 days a week, you needed to work 7 days a week. and he really meant that. Mm-hmm. So, that's just the way that I grew up, and my father was first generation Italian-American, and my grandfather came over, of course, from Italy, and he taught my father a lot about respect, which started with self-respect, and about respect, like respecting your country, respecting your heritage, respecting your family. And so I think certainly my parents raised us, very much in respecting, your parents, your elders, and your teachers and your clergy and such. So I think the idea of respect is really ingrained in me from a very young age.
I hear that. Now, the other thing that I was thinking about, and I don't know whether this fits at all for you, is I'm hearing more and more about, and I haven't participated in one of these myself, but I'm interested in them and I hear about them, these leadership programs using horses. And learning to be authentic with horses. You can't play games and you can't fake it. I wonder about that and what you learned from horses.
Yeah, it's very interesting that you brought that up. And it's not something, quite frankly, that I've heard a lot about. I know that horses have been used a lot as therapy horses,
mm-hmm.
Working with children with different kinds of disabilities. But there is certainly something very authentic in a relationship with a horse. I mean, they are remarkably sensitive animals. As a very simple example of that, if you were to fall off, the horse will do everything within his or her power to avoid hitting you.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because you might know that young girls are much more attracted to the horses than our young boys.
Mm-hmm.
And that typically continues. And one of the explanations for that is that young girls tend to have more of a sensitivity, more empathy,
mm-hmm.
and feel like they can build a relationship. In terms of leadership, I think it's one of those areas in which you can't fight against the horse, because if you fight with the horse, you're going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 1,500-pound animal. So if you're going to need to learn to lead a horse, which you do need to learn how to do, right, to be,
mm-hmm.
quote-unquote, in charge, it's not going to be, as my book title might suggest, with a stick.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not going to be the way to get things done in the long term with a horse. It's really about building a relationship over time, and it is about establishing mutual respect.
How interesting. So let's talk about that respect model. Can you describe, simply what the key components are?
Sure. And if I could just give you a little bit of background around it. So I think you mentioned in my introduction that my expertise was in the area of motivation.
Yeah.
And it is. I spent many years studying motivation, and I was actually asked to give a presentation in 2000 about motivating the 21st century worker. And so I reflected upon all the various, you know, models, academic models, and stood back from my whiteboard and decided that if I gave this presentation, I would put everybody in the room to sleep. And so what I tried to do is to really understand the common denominator, the driver underneath all of these models. And at the end of several months of drawing lines and crossing words out, I came down to this idea of respect. So the model goes like this, and this is all about employee engagement, right? Employees giving extra discretionary effort. So what I ask people, and I'll ask your listeners to do as well, is to think about a time when they really respected the organization that they worked for. They respected that organization's mission, vision, values, goals. They respected saying, "I work for this company." Think about a time when you really respected the leadership of that organization, in particular your supervisor. You viewed him or her as somebody who was there to guide you and develop you, to mentor you, to give you a pat on the back when you deserved it and a kick in the butt when you needed it. A time in your life when you really respected your fellow team members. Everybody was headed in the same direction. They supported one another. They were competent. They did their job. People certainly weren't pointing fingers at each other. So you're proud to be part of that team. A time in your life when you respected the work that you did, you found it fundamentally meaningful and valuable for yourself, for your colleagues, and for your customers. The work was challenging, not too simple, not too hard for you, and it was a learning experience. And then a time in your life when you felt respected as an individual within that organization. So you felt listened to and heard. Decisions that affected your job, your input would be part of that. So you just really felt when you walked into work respected. And then what I ask is people, who has ever held a job in a particular moment in time, same supervisor, same team, in which all of that was true, right? They respected the organization, respected the leadership, respected the team, respected the work and felt respected. And out of an audience of, say, 100 people, typically two or three will get a huge smile on their face and raise their hand. And I will say, "So what is it like for you to go to work?" And invariably they will say, "I can't wait to get there." Now, understand that that has nothing to do with money, right?
Yeah.
It has all to do with respect. And it's just, you know, I contrast that, by the way, I apologize for rambling, but contrast that a bit with a recent AOL Huffington Post article and survey that I did, in which 72% of respondents said that they would take another job tomorrow if they could.
Yeah. That doesn't surprise me.
No.
It's sad, but it doesn't surprise me.
Well, you know, the problem is, go off track just a little bit here. The problem is, of course, that in the past, people who really, you know, disliked or disengaged from their jobs would find another job.
Right.
And they can't do that today.
Right. They feel like they can't. Yeah. Their options are so limited. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, what we've ended up with now is probably the largest percentage ever of a workforce that is really dissatisfied.
Yeah.
And that doesn't... That's a lose-lose situation, Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that some of you might out there have resonated with the circle of respect and perhaps even understood that when you've become disengaged, that something was missing, something had gone away. We can think about in our own personal lives that when we gain respect for people, that we want to be closer to them physically, psychologically, emotionally. And when we lose respect from somebody or feel as though we've lost respect, we distance ourselves from that individual. And the reason that respect is so important in terms of leadership is that respect equals power. Power in the sense of being able to influence others around us. So if we think about, you know, Mother Teresa or Gandhi or Abraham Lincoln, John F. Kennedy, any of the great leaders in the world, how did they get their power? How did they get their ability to influence others to follow their vision? And they only got that because people respected them.
Right.
And when we look at individuals, you know, politicians or business leaders or religious leaders who have acted in a way in which people have lost respect for them, they lose power because they lose followers.
Sure. Sure. They're no longer an inspiring leader.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. So leadership, you know, can be very complicated and very simple. You know, for me, leadership is about, you know, creating a vision and inspiring a vision and to inspire others to act in ways to fulfill on that vision.
Yeah, yeah. So, Paul, the respect model, what kind of research did this come out of?
Oh, boy, it came out of obviously many, many years in graduate school of looking at the different models of motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And then it came out of about 7 years of research on employee engagement and looking at various studies that had been completed on that. And then I ran a number of studies over the course of 2 to 3 years in which I asked people about their experience of respect. So I really got clear pretty quickly, I really got clear over the course of a few years about the impact of respect. And then what I wanted to do was understand what led people to feeling respected in the workplace. And so that was a really large study I did in preparation for the book, in which I simply asked people that question, what is it that leads you to feel respected? And that led to, fortunately for me, an acronym around respect. And for example, the R stood for recognition.
Mm-hmm.
So fundamentally, we all just want to be recognized and acknowledged for the contributions that we make to an organization. The E was around empowering people, giving people the tools and resources to be successful. The S was about supportive feedback, giving ongoing coaching and mentoring. P is partnering, fostering a sense of collaboration within and across teams. Second E was for setting clear expectations and holding people accountable to those expectations. C was for demonstrating consideration to folks, and the T stood for trust. Because obviously in a personal or a professional relationship, if there's not a foundation of trust, there is really not much point in moving on.
Makes sense to me. So how do we know, we know that that's what the research shows, but how do we know that this works? Where has this worked? Where have you seen it? Can you tell us some examples?
Sure. Well, one of the things that I've done is to look at organizations in which there are really highly effective leaders. And to go into that organization and, you know, ask people, interview people, and hold surveys to say, what is it that has made, you know, this leader so effective in their role? And invariably what they come back is to the way that they treat people with respect. And I do give a few examples of this in my book. And the fact that, you know, people will work for leaders when they just really feel respected by them and respect them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's not complicated, right? People get that. And then what I've done with, you know, my book is an outline and such, have been able to go into corporations and work with individuals whom do not literally receive a high score on this. I do a 360-degree, you know, leadership respect analysis. And, again, identify leaders who are not powerful in their organizations, are not influencing people because of this loss of respect that they're experiencing, and then literally teach them how to show respect to people. And I often joke that I get paid really well to teach people things that they should have learned in kindergarten.
Mm-hmm. So true. Yeah. So true. Do you find that there are particular types of leaders that are more likely to need help in this area or to need some specific tactics and strategies?
Sure. Leaders that are low in empathy, low in emotional intelligence, if you want to call it that, high in narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
So individuals who simply do not understand their impact on others. And what I find really interesting about it is that often they will say statements like, all I care about is being respected. I don't care about being liked. Right? Of course. And what they, of course, fail to understand is that, first of all, you don't, you know, get respect unless you give respect, and you certainly can't demand respect.
Right.
I will also say that I actually did a webinar yesterday. I've been doing some more research recently on the issue of bullying. Right, bullying.
Right, I know
in
that.
In the workforce. Yeah, and I'm working on an article called My Boss is a Bully. And those would obviously be also the similar kinds of profiles. Right. And I'll also say this, that related to your question, also the issue of bullying, you know, I don't think that most leaders go into and say to themselves, you know, I'm a bully,
mm-hmm.
or I'm disrespectful. Like, it's really interesting in my research when I work with an individual, they do not view themselves typically as being disrespectful. It's a real blind spot for them. And, of course, what's happened is that they've moved up in an organization. Typically, one of the behaviors associated with that is assertiveness, mm-hmm. right?
Sure.
And you're, quote-unquote, assertive in your management style. And that gets reinforced over time and obviously escalated. And as they move up into higher positions, it becomes a lot less likely that someone's actually going to give them that feedback.
I'm reminded of Marshall Goldsmith's book, What Got You
Here.
What Got You Here?
Right.
What
we'll
Get You There. Yeah. Yeah, and it's so true that many times that happens and people get rewarded over and over again for being, you know, brash and assertive, and if it's a man, they talk about aggressive in a positive way. And then that really doesn't work with people wanting to work their hearts out for you in good ways.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
And I have to say, Marshall was kind enough to preview my book, and so there's a quote from him on the front of my cover, which I really appreciate.
Nice.
He's really a wonderful man. It's been certainly a role model for me in my career.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But he gets that, too, that piece about people being rewarded for behaviors that ultimately the strength becomes a weakness because it overshadows other things and blocks other things.
Right.
Interesting stuff. So tell me a little bit more about bullying. How are you defining that, and what would you see as somebody who's bullying in the workplace?
Yeah, so, you know, as I've started to work in this area, I have really come to the conclusion that there are no clear or white or black statements around this issue.
Mm-hmm.
So some individuals would consider things like not being, you know, invited to lunch with the rest of the team as being bullied. And in other environments, one company I work with in particular, you may have a department manager who yells and screams and cusses at an employee, and in that environment, with that employee and that supervisor, that would probably not be perceived as being bullying.
Okay.
So one of, I think, the most important parts of studying and researching and, you know, holding people accountable for this is to really understand both what is the intent of the individual's behaviors, for example, the supervisors, although bullying is extremely prevalent in a peer-to-peer situation as well.
Mm-hmm.
What is the intent, but then also what is the impact on the other individual? And
right.
So what I'm encouraging organizations to do is to fold it into their discrimination and harassment training.
Ah, okay.
Viewing it as a form of harassment. And, of course, and just literally teaching and educating people about what bullying behavior in general looks like, and to also understand, Lisa, the incredible, the dramatic adverse consequences that has on individuals, both psychological and their physical health. You know, there have been stories, and unfortunately we see it in the news all the time, about school-age children who will become suicidal or commit suicide because they've been bullied.
Yes.
Well, we certainly don't see that as frequently in the workplace, but we see tremendous levels of anxiety and depression, as well as cardiovascular conditions, and those are just to name a few. Then there's also the impact, of course, on their family members outside of work, impacts on their coworkers, because, you know, when we see somebody getting bullied, then, you know, it affects us. And then, of course, it has a tremendous impact on the bottom line of the organization itself, in terms of not only lost productivity and turnover and absenteeism, but now we're seeing lawsuits that are in the multi-million dollar range in which somebody has claimed disability for having been bullied and then brought a lawsuit against the organization.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, of course, that's the thing that opens the eyes of most corporations first, is the bottom line.
Of course, right? That's how, unfortunately, corporations actually stand up and pay attention. I did read one statistic yesterday that one in five people who go out on disability as a result of stress in their workplace. Of course, bullying is a major driver of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that, for better or for worse, organizations and leaders are actually going to start paying attention to this issue. Not perhaps for the what we would consider the quote-unquote right reason, but because it is impacting the bottom line of the organization. So whatever reason brings them to the table to pay attention to this issue, I'll take it.
Wow. So, believe it or not, we're almost out of time. What would you like to leave our listeners as kind of a one final message or important takeaway? Is there something you'd like to specifically share with them?
I would, Lisa, so thank you. So here's my line. You will never get the behavior that you want by focusing on the behavior that you don't want. It doesn't matter if it's your employee, your boss, your spouse, your children, or your dog. You will never get the behavior that you want by focusing on the behavior that you don't want. So if you want to make changes in your life, changes in your organization, changes in your relationships outside of work, the key to all that is to identify the behavior that you want and pay attention and reinforce that, not pay attention to the behavior that you don't want.
Great. Great. Well, this has gone really fast and been really fascinating. I know we could talk for a long time about this. I'm sure many of our listeners are going to have more questions. How can they find out more? How can they connect if they want to read your book? Tell us about that.
Sure. Yeah, thank you. Visit my website, www.paulmarciano.com. P-A-U-L, M as in Mary, A-R-C-I-A-N-O, and you can send me an email, sign up for my newsletter, watch presentations, and even order my book, or certainly go to Amazon and look up Carrots and Sticks Don't Work, or any local bookstore should carry it as well. And I always love to hear from listeners, and I try to reply to all of my emails. So thank you.
Nice.
I look forward to hearing from your listeners.
How nice. I'm sure you will. Well, thank you very much. This has been fascinating. I've really enjoyed it, and I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you. At least I really appreciate the opportunity.
You're welcome. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us tonight on The Leadership Focus, the show which gives you new ideas, interesting guests, and actionable strategies to help you be an incredible leader with a more balanced life. We hope you've enjoyed the show. If you have, please go to blogtalkradio.com and become a friend. And make us a favorite. To sign up for our free newsletter with more tips and strategies you can use, go to focuscoaching.net on the web. That's focuscoaching.net on the web. Until next time, this is your host, Lisa Pospiel, urging you to be a better leader every day.